It's a Cup of Tea show. It's John Gibbons, and we are in the Bookbinder on Lock Lane, and I'm joined by a friend and fellow Red, Nick Blood. Hello.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming out for a chat. We're going to talk about a little bit about your career, because it's an interesting one, and yeah. I think people will be interested in both that and also how you combine that with following Liverpool Football Club, because, I mean, first of all, you are a big Red, so tell us about that, first of all.
Yeah, it's down to my dad, which, you know, we're both celebrating both his birthday and yours. And it was a bit of a serendipitous thing, wasn't it? Would have been my dad's birthday today. It's Gibbo's birthday. You just recently lost your dad as well. I'm staying just round the corner from where your dad lived.
Yeah.
And then when you texted me yesterday and said, let's do the Bookbinder, I was sat in here doing some work. It's down to my dad's from Highton. So grew up with, all the kind of stories and memorabilia and, stuff around the house, the Shankly and, cuttings from newspapers. And my dad wasn't really wasn't a religious guy, wasn't kind of particularly sentimental or anything like that, but it was just when the sort of starry eyes was football. That was the thing, which was completely pretty rational guy, I guess that's what I'd say.
Yeah.
But like the one irrational thing in his life was his passion for football and specifically Liverpool Football Club. Really proud to be from here. And, it kind of, I think that Liverpool culture bled through into our upbringing and family. As a little kid, I wasn't particularly bothered about football when I was little. Followed any different team that other mates at school were following. And then it was then probably I was around 10 or 11 when went to Anfield. Couldn't afford to get tickets, but we just went down there on match day and I was just like, wow. Just the energy and the buzz. And it kind of clicked for me then what it meant to my dad. And then it was just our thing, really. It was like, every morning he'd read the sport bit of the paper and then pass it on to me. And he was a good footballer and understood football a lot better than I ever have done. So just kind of having that person who you kind of see it through his eyes and, he'd always kind of be the one which I'd look to for, you're working out your opinion on a new manager or a new player. And it was your dad that would, seen it all before and stuff. So it was just a really big thing for me and my dad, really. That's why I'm here. That's why I love the club and love coming up to games and stuff. And, I've been fortunate enough to meet great people and great friends and everything through it.
Yeah. So did your dad move for work? Was it that kind of thing that happened with a lot of people in this area, I guess, is that the work dries up and you've got to go to South to find it.
Yeah, he was his parents emigrated when he was 18 to Australia when it was like cheap passage to Australia. His dad got offered a decent job compared to what he was doing here. So they just kind of announced that they were leaving to Australia, but my dad and his two older brothers were kind of settled here really.
Yeah.
But he was from that age, from 18, like pretty much on his own, didn't have anywhere to live. I think he said they gave him a tenner and he just had to sell all his stuff. He just had a couple of bags of stuff and went to live with his best friend's family. Around that time, both him and his older brothers, migrated because of work. It was that period where a lot of people had to leave because there was just no jobs. So he moved down south and met my mum.
So it was the football team almost is keeping his connection with the area.
Yeah.
This is almost the thing where it happens to a lot of people who I speak to is that they say, like, obviously I'm sure he was banging to when he was here, but, when he moves away, watching the game every week or coming up for the odd game or seeing them just keeps him kind of feeling like he's still kind of got that connection, really.
Exactly, and it was, what we'd often do, if we came up for a game, we'd drive to Highton and jump on the train or whatever into town, and we'd go and sort of see his old house and stuff, and just the look on his face when he was here, just immediately, like, because he wasn't particularly sociable, my dad, so he wasn't like, and I think he always felt a bit of an outsider where we grew up. Just the smile on his face when we were here, and just the fact that, you know, you'd go get your ticket for the train and the woman behind the counter would be chatting to you, and just everyone was, you know, just a good sense of humour. You know, he was very, very biased towards the region of Liverpool for pretty much every personality trait. And he, you know, really kind of, I saw that look of kind of just joy in his eyes whenever he was here.
Yeah. When did he pass away, if you don't mind me asking?
It'll be 10 years this year.
Yeah. So, is it tough when, because I imagine it's going to be for me, which is why I'm asking you. So my dad died recently, and we had me and my dad got season tickets together when I was 10. I say together. Yeah. He bought them. I was 10 in 1992.
Yeah.
So we've done almost the whole of this sort of barren period together, sat there, and you know, you've had like good times and stuff like that, and you know, we've been to some amazing nights, you know, like Barcelona and stuff last year and things like that, and you know, countless brilliant nights, especially in Europe, but obviously that league title was always you know, the one that was missing. So when we do it, whenever date that may be,
yeah,
obviously I'm going to be delighted, but I'm also, there's going to be part of me which is like, oh, I wish that
I mean, it's tough, and I mean, I'm sure like today for you it's the first of things, you know, that can be really tricky, like, and anxiety inducing of, you know, you've got his first birthday coming up, you've got your birth, you know, your birthday's today, and those things can be tough. And I do get that. I mean when Brendan Rodgers took over, and we were playing probably the time that I can remember watching and really engaging with football was the most exciting period, because the football was great fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, as much as we, you know, we'd won trophies, you know, and all this sort of stuff, it was pretty much just, oh, my dad would have loved this. He would have really loved watching, you know, just gung-ho football. And then with Klopp, just a whole different level. And there's always that bittersweet thing.
Yeah.
You know, of just wishing he was here, and like, you know, me being in a position where, you know, because it's not cheap to come up to watch a game when you're factoring in your travel and if you're going to stay over and stuff like that. Thankfully, I've got friends I can stay with. But, you know, as I've got older and you're more financially independent, you know, my dream was always like to be able to, me and my dad, the chance we'd be able to get season tickets were probably next to nothing, but just be in a position where I'd be able to bring him up every other week to the game.
Yeah.
And I never managed to, you know, do that,
yeah,
which is something which is always, yeah, there's that. Someone said to me though, like, you know, this will hopefully resonate with you as well, is that like there's a hole and it will never be filled, but that hole becomes a part of you.
Yeah.
So you just have to kind of embrace that it's just part of who you are now. But yeah, it's, you know, like, I don't know if I might have told you on our WhatsApp group, but after, so 2005, we watched it in the pub where he'd always go down south. I remember at half time, I said to him, should we go and watch the second half at home? And he went, no. Like, you never leave a game before the end of, you know, you never leave a match before the end of final whistle. He's like, you never know what you're going to see. Like, you know, whether it's, and he always had that thing, you never leave before the final whistle. He said, even if you see the other team score an amazing goal, it's like you missed that moment. And he said, and not only that, the stick I get for being like the only Scouser in here, the amount of stick I get anyway.
Yeah, everyone would notice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can't slip out.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, we're staying here till the, and of course we win. And I remember afterwards, we went to take a piss, and I remember him just shaking his head and saying, you know, you save money for a rainy day. And he's like, it's just money. You know, life's about experiences. And he said, we should have gone. And we said to each other, right, next time we're in the European Cup, we'll go. And obviously, he wasn't around to see it, but I was lucky enough to be there. And a couple of days later, I was on the train, and we had that WhatsApp group with all the guys that
Madrid,
were after Madrid. So everyone was texting around, and so, I don't know who it was, sent around that clip of that. It was a dad giving his son his ticket.
Oh yeah.
And he said, you know, I've been there before. I was there last time. This is you, and his son's just welling up. And I was on this train, and tears just started falling down my face, to the point where I was just like blubbering. I got home to my girlfriend. She's American, and she kind of follows it with me, but I think at that point we're still trying to get our head around it all. and just all this emotion came out, and I was, and it was, because obviously she was worried, because I'm like bawling my eyes out, but I was like, no, I don't feel sad. It's like, it was like a happy cry, because I was like, he gave me this gift. Like, that was his thing he left me with, you know, is that I would never have had that experience if it wasn't for him. I'd never have no reason to support Liverpool if he wasn't from here, or if he, you know, hadn't, you know, been such a big fan. And I just thought about places I've been, people I've met, friends I've made, and I just felt so grateful that I'd been given that. And I just felt, you know, some people say, like, they feel sorry for people that aren't into football.
Yeah.
Because they're like, how can you, what's your place? And it was that thing, it's like, man, I've had this incredible experience, and this inform my life and who I am and things I do, and it's down to him. And I just felt so grateful that he gave me that.
Yeah,
you know, which I'm sure,
yeah,
you can relate to.
No, absolutely, you know? Absolutely. So when was your first game, can you remember?
So the first game, I didn't go to a game until I was like in my late teens, largely because of just money.
Yeah.
And then getting tickets as well. I mean, it was obviously way easier back then. I went to first game at Anfield, wasn't until my late teens, but I'd seen as play away, because often then people would be like, oh, can't make it down for the match. And, you know, but I remember my earliest memory, which I probably would have been about 16 or 17, was seeing Yari Littmanen score against Spurs. I think he might have volleyed it from like the left-hand side of the box. Like cross goal, I think it went. Yeah, that's the first goal I can remember.
Yeah.
So it was probably then. But you know, as a youngster, I didn't. You know, it's only really as I've been able to come up myself and afford to come up myself.
Going a lot more.
Yeah.
So in terms of the acting, though, and I know you got into that really early, didn't you? Yeah, I was reading a bit of your backstory before, which is always a strange thing to do with a friend, but like. You sort of had a similar experience to me, because I got into youth theatre and stuff like that. Yeah, I went to an organisation called First Bite, actually. Right. And I've only remembered them because Rebecca, who ran it, got in touch with me recently.
Oh, no.
But they were brilliant. And, you know, in terms of, I think for me, just learning my voice, we used to do a lot of like improvisation and stuff like that, and this idea that someone could just throw something at you and you've got to go with it, I think does help you. And I think, like, I don't want to tell all this into my father's, but something, my dad was a teacher and he used to do a lot of plays
too.
Yeah. So my dad was a teacher and he used to do a lot of plays in his school, and they were always a bit weird and wacky, but and they were always musicals. But he used to say, like, get all the kids to do it, because if a kid can go on stage, then they can sell themselves in an interview. And if a kid can belt out a tune, then, you know, then they can go out and tell the world how brilliant they are.
Yeah.
I think there is something in that, and I think it massively helped me. And obviously now I guess we're both in the performing arts in a way, aren't we? And I think, like, it has massively helped me in terms of, you know, I mean, it's helped you because it's your career.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that. Like, I imagine doing what you do, being able to, just having that confidence to speak up in front of people, not be too afraid of your own voice. No, I think it's great for kids to do. I think that you can, you know, sometimes you find that quiet kid who doesn't have much self-confidence, but they can really act, and then suddenly they find their place, you know. And and also just like, you're forced to work with people, it's teamwork as well, you know. If you're trying to, you know, I was saying, it was like a workshop I went to as a kid. I mean, I didn't start acting professionally until quite late, but as far as like it being a kind of hobby or vocation or whatever, was young. Like when I was about 7, I went to this drama group, and it was it's all improvising and devising. So you're having to kind of negotiate with people and get on with people and I mean, it's weird, because I guess, like, as much, how much it's informed my personality is kind of like, who knows,
because
it's from such a young age.
Of course,
but then
actually
it's interesting you ask that question, because I think my brother and sister are quite different in personality wise, certainly less kind of gregarious than I am. So I don't know which is chicken and egg.
What was it that appealed to you, though?
Do you know what? It's... do you know what? Right. So I thought about this, because so many actors always go like, Storytelling, that's what they always say. And I think I've probably said that a few times just because I'm like, well, I don't really know the answer to the question.
Yeah.
So just like storytelling. But then what I think I stumbled upon it where it was, I think it's communication. I think it's been able to like relate to somebody else, whether it's an audience or one other person, with like something about that. There's a little bit of magic that can happen, particularly in live situations where there's something about it, you know, communicate, you make someone laugh and you've both made a connection, you know, I think that communal thing to it is what I really responded to. But I also realized when the genesis, I think, of what made me want to do it was when I was a little kid, I got a magic set for one Christmas, and I must have only been like 4 or 5, something like that. And it was, you know, the SpongeBob cups.
Yeah.
So I was doing that, and I'd got everybody round, all like the aunties and uncles and stuff, and I was going to do this little show.
Yeah.
And so the first time I did it to go like, ta-da, I'd messed it up. And because I'd been taking it so seriously and was like really wanted everybody there to watch it, plan this whole thing out, is that everybody started cracking up, like all the adults, because they're seeing this little kid, you know, freak out. And I remember, so the family story was always that I kept trying to do it and I kept messing it up and I couldn't do it right. And I hadn't told anyone for years that actually, I remember at the time messing it up, getting the laugh and going, that feels good.
That's
and
brilliant.
Carry on doing it.
Yeah.
So I think that
this
was
my shtick.
I think that was like definitely a moment where I did it clicked. But also some of it's to do with like, you know, if you weren't good at what you did, you probably wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a certain degree that you're going to improve and you're going to work at it. But if you were crap at hosting podcasts or talking about football, you'd probably have done a valiant effort, but it wouldn't have been as successful as it is. And there's some degree as well. Where you go if you feel like you've got some talent in something, you know, you're gonna, there's more reason to pursue it. It just felt like when I started doing it that I got it quite quickly. I kind of, my timing was pretty good and so on. So
when do you figure out you can turn into a job?
Quite late, really. Yeah, I didn't know anyone who was an actor. It was like, it didn't really seem like a viable, it was a dream, you know. And then also I think that thing of, you know, sometimes lacking that confidence to say you want to do this, pursue this dream, and, you know, saying that out loud is a little bit scary sometimes. So the only real thing I knew about was like the footlights at Oxford and Cambridge. So I'd have been encouraged to apply for Oxbridge when I was in sixth form. And I was like, oh, there we go, that's what I'll do. If I get into, you know, Cambridge, then I can join the footlights and that's how, you know, I'll become an actor. Didn't get in. So I found myself kind of a little bit lost for a bit. And I went to university, studied politics, didn't like it. I mean, I've not had any contact with anyone from university, like, you know, intentional contact, text, email, phone from the day I left. It wasn't the right environment for me, really. I made loads of friends in Bristol, from Bristol rather than from uni. But I just felt really lost. I think I probably got quite depressed at times. And then I was, somebody I knew was going to the ITV television workshop, which I think they ran in Bristol, Birmingham, Nottingham, then that changed into the workshop, which is where like those of the This Is England guys and Shane Meadows.
Yeah, I've heard
the Granada.
Vicky talk about that on the Two Shot pod with Craig Parkinson.
Right, there we go. Yeah, yeah.
Podcaster.
Right, yeah. So
Craig Parkinson does it. What's her surname? Vicky
McClure.
That's the one. Yeah. So she talks about it on there, and it sounds brilliant. Well, what they throw at you, like.
Yeah. So the original thing was run by ITV, and I think or Granada or whatever.
Yeah.
And then theirs has become independent, and theirs was the one that like. It was Ian Smith or something, the guy's name is, but apparently he was just amazing.
Yeah.
The guy that ran the Bristol one was like the David Brent of acting workshops. I mean, it was some of the stuff he would come out with, you were just like, how are you responsible for this group of kids? I mean, he was a maniac. He was like using the budget to like shoot his own movies that he had written, these
brilliant.
Terrible films.
That's fantastic.
And then roping in all these kids to be in it.
It's
but like
three actors.
Yeah, yeah. But like treated him like, you know, it was like his own little personal fiefdom where you had to like really suck up to him to get a part in one of his terrible films. And it, you know, if he offered you one, it was like he's ordaining you. But when I was there, I met other kids who were serious about acting and wanted to go to drama school. So I was like, that's what I'll do. I'll go to drama school. So, yeah, I started applying to drama schools and moved to London and, yeah, went to London. So I've said, you know, I left drama school when I was like 26. So I was definitely one of the older ones there. Yeah.
So in terms of your sort of career since then, I mean, people might know you've sort of on different things depending on what you're into. So Trolley was big.
Yeah.
I really like Trolley. I love Jane Horrocks.
I just
think she's brilliant. I'd watch her in anything, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I love stuff like Little Voices, stuff like that, where she's just like incredible in it. And then obviously Agents of the Shield and stuff like that recently, which is very different.
Yeah.
And I mean, so you've moved over to America now. Haven't you?
Well, I kind of live between the two, really. Yeah. When I got Agents of Shield, I had to move over to LA, which is not a bad thing.
Do you like it?
I do, yeah. I didn't expect to. I first went there for like about a week or so, just because I was like, I'd got an American manager, I think at that point, and I just kind of came out to see the lie of the land, really, and enjoyed it. You know, I was just like, you know, rented someone's pool house and just kind of sat in the sun a lot. And then I did this play Backbeat.
You were Stuart Sutcliffe.
Indeed, yeah. And we went and did a stint in LA. So I was there for a couple of months doing that. And that was kind of bonkers. It was during pilot season. So I signed with an agency out there and then they were sending me up for loads of stuff. So I was just like doing the play at night. It like the interval, I'd be in my dressing room running lines for an audition the next day. And I was on stage pretty much the whole time.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. Apart from about 5 or 10 minutes at the end. And I'd be straight into my dressing room just reading lines the next day. So it'd kind of been, I'd enjoyed the excitement of it all with work stuff, but then actually going to live out there, weirdly, even though it's like the centre of the universe for entertainment, I feel like I can ignore it a bit. Whereas in London, so many of my mates that aren't in the industry have kind of gradually moved out. So you end up hanging out with a lot of industry people and all the chats about acting and what's up, you know, and it just like drives me nuts. Whereas in LA, I've got a couple of like old pals through like skateboarding things. And then it you know, I guess because it's so ever present there, you can just talk about other stuff.
Right.
And then the big thing is, it's just, it's sunny every day. And if you're of a kind of slightly morose disposition, which I can be, it's really good for your head to be in the sunshine.
Wake up and it's sunny. Yeah, it does help, doesn't it?
It does, it really does. And then you can see the horizon and you can, you know, there's a beach over there, there's a mountain up there. You can be up a mountain camping in less than an hour with no phone reception. I feel so lucky to be in a position where I can live in both countries and, you know, I'm able to work out there and stuff. I'm well aware of how fortunate I am. You know, this year was like the first winter I'd spent all in the UK for quite a few years. It was a bit of a shock to the system.
When it gets to February, you're like, fucking still. You can't still be like this.
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean.
But it is nice. Did you go out for the, when at the tour? Oh, you were there, weren't you? Because I came along to one of the Anfield.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah, we were, because we've got a really good relationship with the LA Sports Club. So,
you know, Brian and stuff. Yeah.
So we did. We didn't do Joxer's. We went down to Joxer's, but then we did something in
It was a bar.
Motor.
Yeah.
Motor something. I can't remember what it was
called. It was in Culver City. I think it was still in Culver City. Yeah.
So it wasn't too far because we were staying on the beach. So it wasn't too far for us. But it was a girl called Melanie who we got to know. She's a film producer, actually.
Right.
And we got to know through... I was in a band and we went and did some stuff at Sundance, which is a little bit random, but... Yeah. But we did, and we sort of, you know, did some shows over there, and it was...
What was the band?
The band was called Silent Sleep, who did pretty well, but it was sort of not amazing. The guys are doing a band called Harm now, who are doing much better, but they just shed me and everything. Everything took off. That's happened a few times, actually. Now I think about it, you know, I'll just say I'm bad luck rather than not untalented, but...
My mate, Simon Wollstonecraft, he was the drummer in the Patrol got bored because it wasn't really happening. They then became Stone Roses, but he'd already left.
Yeah.
Then he was offered to be in the Smiths. He wasn't sure about Morrissey's voice, so he said no. Brilliant. 6 months later, they're massive.
That's brilliant. I mean, that probably happens a fair bit, but it is the, I mean, the getting bored thing's interesting in that. So I was in a band called Pinhole when we were teenagers.
Yeah.
And then I left when I was 18 to go to university.
Yeah.
And just thought, oh, I want to go do this. All my mates were going to uni and stuff. And then they did a few different things and then eventually got signed when I was 21 and they got signed as a new band called The Dead 60s. The Dead 60s had the 60s, top 30 album, three top 30 singles.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, you should have stayed with them and all this. And I was like, well, they've done that for that whole time.
So they became The Dead 60s?
Yeah. I really like The Dead 60s. But I was saying, like, when people were saying, oh, you know, you should have stayed with them. And I'm like, but from when I left till I was 18 to 21, they practiced every day.
They've
done all this. They've done all this hard work. And I've just, like, got pissed and stuff in university. Do you know what I mean? And like, you know, it's like, it's not like
you get out what you put in.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like they put the hard yards in when I was just when it was like gigging once a week and trying to impress girls. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so it is. I think like the people who
where are they now though? Have they got a successful podcast? Are they sat in the Bookbinder with Nick Blood? No, they're not.
Exactly. I don't know what we're talking about now. LA. So yeah, it's, but there's a good supporters club out there in LA, isn't there? And that must help you in terms of keeping connected and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know how often you go down and stuff, but just having other people you can speak to it about and stuff like that.
I used to go down quite a bit when I first lived in LA, and then I got an amazing TV package and a projector, and just it was so nice watching it at home. But I'll go down and I know Brian and stuff. He's a really lovely lad, and a bunch of the other guys involved with it. It was actually really fun when the team came out because just there was so much of a buzz and. You know, obviously you guys were over, and the Red Men guys were over. My mate Tom, who obviously is how we know each other, he was over. And it was a real nice thing to kind of get a little bit of flavour of that in LA.
It's funny how the tours have changed so much though, because we kind of went and didn't really know kind of what to expect.
Yeah.
And you know, we did a couple of live shows that went pretty well. But like now, you know, the ship of Jamie Webster wearing his legends and all that stuff. I mean, you see what they did in Boston, which is like 1,000 people in this place, and we did some stuff, and then they had the legends on, and then and obviously Jamie, and it's like, you know, I think the club have sort of, I guess, like clocked onto the fact that, you know, you sending the players over at one is one thing, but actually people want the whole thing. So when people come over to Anfield, for example, or get over from wherever, not just America, obviously wherever in the world, like they've always said to us, so what else should we do? Where should I be going before? Should we be doing after? And stuff like that. The fact that Jamie plays in Hotel Tears, great, because you can just go down and watch him. And it's all that, really. And so the fact that the club, and as you say, it's partly through our friend Tom, takes all that over now. Is boss, isn't it?
It's quality, and you know, because there's always that slight tourist element to it, that way, you know, like I remember, like in Australia, where, you know, that amazing experience, like I had a bunch of Aussie family that all got to go there, and you go to actually then being in a stadium full of Liverpool fans, everybody singing You Will Never Walk Alone, you go, that's different to watching it on TV. Do you know what I mean? Just literally just the game, because kind of something I mentioned when I first came in here about the, you know, obviously like football's all up in the air at the moment, and it's really the communal experience that really makes it. If you weren't watching it with your mates, if you weren't watching it with a crowd of people, it's not the same.
Yeah.
And I think to get a bit of that is great. And there's so many expats everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere you go, there's Scousers, and there's, an Irish contingent that follow Liverpool. And it gives you that sense of pride as well. Like, I mean, I've had that in LA, where you just kind of get that slight sense of pride of them getting this experience, going, wow, what is this? Because their sports are different. They don't have the same culture, you know, that football has.
Yeah.
It's really unique, you know.
I like the mix of cultures, though. Like, we love the tailgating when we go over. Yeah, like, all the Anfield rap boys are like, get down early for tailgating and stuff like that. That's such a thing. And everyone looks after us as well. Like, we just turn up in a taxi, and there's a guy with a stove going, oh, hey, boys, got some hot dogs on. You're like, yeah, don't mind if I do, you know what I mean? Like, do you want a beer? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, cheers, Philadelphia, move on to the next one. Do you know what I mean? Like, we did like a North American tour across one car park. But it's a fun thing, though.
Oh, yeah. When I've been to, like, I used to go watch the Galaxy a bit when Gerard was there, and you'd get that bit of, you know, even there you'd get the tailgating experience. It's, I mean, some of it's mad though. Like, when was it? I can't remember what, was it a Galaxy game or it might have been, I've only been to see one American football game, so it might have been that, where the guy had a foot, like on the back of his pickup, got off a full bar, sound system and decks. Oh, I mean, it was like a mini little club.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the game starts and they pack it all up.
It's unreal.
Just like, with the Americans, if they're into something, they're into it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no half measures. You know, it's like if they're going to do anything, like, they, you know, it's like if you go camping, it's like you see these people and they've got everything. And they're also prepared for, like, Armageddon too. You know, they go for it over there.
So you were there when Jared was there as well.
Yeah.
So must have been quite tempted to get in touch. So Stevie, I'll show you I'll show you all the best bars.
With my missus, I was like, you could babysit his kids. I'm sure you could put a babysitter. No, I did like when I was at the game. It was the Rose Bowl, wasn't it? He walked past, and I can't remember. I was with Brian at that point. I was with, but he walked right past us. And I just thought, there's no way I'm going to like say hello. You could tell he was just like, I need to get through these people as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And he was doing that perfect thing, like walking at just the right speed with his head down where he's not too noticeable, but he's walking where no one can quite catch up with him.
He's mastered
it. He got into the stadium.
Going
to the stadium without anyone bothering him.
Yeah. We bumped into him afterwards, like, because we had to sort of hang around, and presumably he did as well. So he kind of came out and he was just waiting for someone to come and pick him up. So we had a bit of a chat with him and, sort of, you know, and then he sort of knew who we were vaguely, you know, at that point kind of thing. But, you know, so we had a bit of a chat, so that was quite cool. But yeah, it was interesting from him being over there and then kind of Liverpool going as well.
I'm kind of like, do you know what I'd love? I was thinking, is the equivalent of like a World Cup or whatever, but with your club. I was like, imagine how much fun it would be if you did like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You go away, there's like a tournament in the summer and you're just in Portugal or whatever, just following your club around, how much crap that would be. That's a big bang out for that. Because you get that sort of vibe when it's like a pre-season. I mean, you must have had it when you were in America.
Yeah.
Just bouncing around city to city and getting a different little flavour each city.
But then the games have got a bit of edge to them as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll make it happen.
I'll put it forward. I'll get my proposal together.
So I was wondering, you know, you told me a little bit before about your work and what sort of bigger pressure is it in terms of playing a Beetle or like a Marvel character? Ooh. Because both supporters are like supportive, you call them that. Someone stuck with him, it must be quite interesting because there's only so much known about him. So he's almost like a blank canvas for you, but then at the same time, I'm sure if you get it wrong, you're doing about it.
Well, did you know what? Funny with that, actually. So I got that part, again, a little segue, and obviously it being, you know, a bit of the subject of the day. So I, when the audition came round, I said to my agent, I was like, oh, hold on, what is this, a musical? Like, I don't sing, I don't play music. Like, he's like, no, it's not a musical, it's a play, but it's got music and stuff. And I was a bit unsure because I was just like, I can't, I'm a terrible singer and stuff. And it was about 6 months after my dad had died, something like that. And I just thought, and I just stopped and went, oh, hold on, like, this is ridiculous. Like, why am I even questioning this? Of course I've got to do this. Because that whole story about Stuart Sutcliffe, I knew all that because of my dad, because he grew up two doors down from him in Highton.
That's amazing.
So one of his claims to fame was they'd played football with a Beatle, because they lived right opposite the park. So he'd played football with Stuart Sutcliffe. So I always knew that story. And it's not a particularly well, you know, when people think of the fifth Beatle, they always think of Pete Best.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, what am I doing? I'm mad. Like, of course I've got to go in for this. Got the part and stuff. And then, approaching it, funnily enough, so his sister, because I met his sister said that he actually had a bit of a soft Edinburgh accent more than a Scouse accent. But there was this thing, like, if I went and did an Edinburgh accent, people would be going, his accent's shocking.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, it's an Edinburgh twins. No one's going to believe me. They're going to pay it.
So it was like, right, well, I've got, you know, you're going to have to do the Scouse accent. And you're kind of, you slightly let off the hook because, like, I mean, he died at 22.
Mm.
So it's not that there's loads of people who, you know, there's no, you know, even footage of him and stuff. But his sister, who wrote the book on him and everything, she was really complimentary about, you know, what I'd done, and said to me at one point, she was like, I felt like I was watching him again. It was just, it was really nice. And she was proper sound. But yeah, I mean, I was fortunate. I feel like more like Andy, who played John Lennon and stuff, like those guys had it tough because you can't escape that.
Yeah.
I could have done anything. But no, that's his sister Tommy. That's what he was like. But yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't worry about that too much. And generally people were always really supportive. I did get a weird letter when I was doing it from a guy saying, "Dear Stuart, I'm so glad to hear that you're still playing music."
Oh.
Do you still speak to John and to Paul and stuff? I was like, oh my God. Oh. And he'd written out these lyrics for me to pass on to John Lennon. And he was just like, I'm not sure how to reply to this because do I shatter his
delusion? Yeah, so many barriers to passing those lyrics to John Lennon.
Yeah, exactly. But then, I guess probably more so with the Marvel thing, you're like, people are so kind of protective over it. Like, the fans really feel ownership over it. I think partly because it's gone so massive as well that you've got a lot of people that were bang into Marvel since they were little kids, and now it's everybody is. But the other side of that is that they're all so supportive. Like, you're then part of their world. Okay. And I've had nothing but positive from people, not because I'm anything special or I did a particularly good job, just because you're like, you're in the gang. And people are, you know, it was really kind of doing things like comic cons and stuff can be a bit of a bonkers experience, but at the end of the day the people were just really, really lovely. I mean, who doesn't want to be in a room where everybody's being really nice to you? You know what I mean? But you definitely felt, I think I was quite anxious before my first episode went out, because you were just like, you know, with all of it, we're all winging it, you know? And you just hope that they embrace you.
It's quite like a big character as well, though, isn't it, in terms of, you know, Marvel kind of history.
I think for the Marvel geeks, yeah, the people that bang into it, because he's like the British, you know, the Samuel L. Jackson character, so he's like the British version of that, but again slightly obscure enough that like not everyone's really gonna know who he is, so I kind of dodged another bullet there as well.
So what are you up to now, work wise
well, at the moment, who knows? So I'm meant to go back to LA in the summer, all being well, to shoot this thing, which, like with everything now, you can't say. It's nothing like crazy huge or like anything like that, but with everything they would lock you down on NDAs. So meant to go back there in the summer to shoot that. I just did this thing for BBC, a 4-part drama called Lethal White that will be out, I guess, sort of late autumn. And then I've got my own thing that I've been working on, which is being produced by a company in LA, but we wanted to do a co-pro because it's all set in the UK. Wanted to do a co-pro with a production company here, so we've got a production company here on board. So the plan with that now is to, because I've written the first episode and stuff, but we'll now develop the rest of the series. So with a view to kind of, I guess, at the end of the summer, then take it out to channels. But that's been an amazing, I mean, that's taken a lot of time and effort and everything. It's been brilliant, but also, you know, you're just pushing that boulder up the hill and just waiting to get to the top and everything's a go, you know. But it's I mean, you know what it's like trying to get stuff off the ground and do stuff. But thankfully, like the reaction to it has been great, you know, all around so far. So everybody that seems to come across it really likes it. It's quite dark and quite heavy, but you know, hopefully we'll pull it. Hopefully this time next year we'll be having a conversation about it actually being made, you know. But right now that'll probably take me up till the summer is developing that, and then off to LA for a bit, and then the great unknown again, you know, which we're all living in.
Yeah. So just before we go, I was just wondering if you've got any sort of unusual experiences the football have brought you, whether it's kind of watching a game in a mad situation or getting a bond with an unlikely person through footy, like just from a kind of like living abroad, really.
Yeah, well, there's the story for Madrid, but I don't want to preempt your...
Oh, no, you can't do that one. That's coming out soon.
Oh, right, that's a cracking story.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, what's a good... I mean, like, some of the stuff... I mean, coming back from Madrid was an effort. That was bonk. I mean, there's things like when you end up, like, watching it in... You know, like, the Barcelona second leg. I was in my trailer
Yeah.
Screaming the place down, just like
everyone's like, what's going
on? Yeah, yeah, like, and thanking the Lord that everything always ran over and that we were never on time and I managed to watch the whole game. But trying to think of something off the top of my head. I mean, I guess in recent memory it would be coming back from Madrid. I'd you know, we'd left that party.
Yeah.
I mean, you went all the way through, didn't you?
Seven, I think.
Yeah. I left at 7:15.
I mean, that's nearly all. Yeah, I don't think I get any extra marks.
It's still
minutes.
Like, you know, people still going. And then got back to my spot, like head hit the pillow and was awake like an hour late. And you know, when you get that weird adrenaline thing in those situations where it just sees you through. And I get to the so I had a train to Valencia, a flight from Valencia to Brussels, and then Brussels to London. And I get to the train station and I don't realise that it's like airports there. You know, I guess because all like ETA bombings and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like that it's full on airport security. Yeah. So I get there to the ticket machine and there's no trains. I can't book a ticket for train until 5:00 in the afternoon. And I'm like, I need to be on that next train, like to get my flight. So I was like, what do I do? So I bought the ticket for the 5:00 one, which got me through security. Yeah. You know, you've got to put your bag through the whole shebang, you get an airport. Yeah. So then I'm in like, you know, the main sort of concourse area where you can, you know, like your gates when you're at the airport. And I'm like, right, I'm just going to have to like try and wing this. And I just, you know, stroll up to the guy and flash my ticket and they're like, whoa, you know, call guy, no, wrong ticket. And I'm just thinking, right, you know, sometimes you get that thing of like, I'm getting on that train.
Yeah.
I'm just getting on that train by hook or by crook. So I just thought, right, if I start getting all arsey with him, I haven't got
a hope.
It's like you're never going to be able to argue your way onto it. So I just kind of like did my best bit of like, you know, forlorn and lost puppy acting. Was like, you know, I know a little bit of Spanish, but I then just made it even worse, that just to show that I was trying against all odds. And I was saying like, you know, someone stole my ticket. I had a ticket for the early train, so I just bought this other one. And then the guy's just going, no. And so I go to these other, they were security guards and they sent me over. So I see this other guy, he had a suit on. So I thought he looked, you know, positional authority. So I'm trying the same thing with him. And his initial thing was just like, nah, fuck off kind of thing. But I think because I was just being like, you know, shrugging my shoulders, just looking a bit forlorn. He then, you know, chatted to me a bit. And I was just like, please, I need to get on this flight to Valencia. And somehow just went, I can't even remember. So I went into autopilot of just like blagging my way on. And then it's like a minute to go and this train's going to leave. Because by that point, I was like, if I get in a cab now to Valencia, there's no way I'm making that flight.
Yeah.
And you know what it was like trying to get flights out. And then after a few minutes with him, I don't know why, this other woman was like flipping out who was on the platform, and he goes over to her, starts speaking to her really loudly in Spanish, comes over to me, is like, give me your ticket. I give him my ticket. He goes over, gives it to this woman, gives me hers, and he goes, go get on the train. So I just sat there on the train, just like,
phew. See, that's that improv.
See, that's the skills it gave me. And I was just, you know, when you're almost like, I was like shaking, just like, did I just manage that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was just like, this is the best. We've just won the European Cup. I'm just gonna make it back home.
Fantastic.
Cracking.
Well, thanks for the coffee. Oh, thanks, mate, for coming out. And thanks for sharing your stories.
Oh, hold on a second. I've got you a...
Tell you what.
It's a birthday present.
Ah, oh, look at this. I'm going to expect this from every guest now.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, look at that. Oh, mate. Actually, it's three wrapped presents and a card.
I think you should open them on tape.
Really? Okay. I mean, this suggests to me that they're not necessarily serious questions.
No, they're not. They're not.
So the first one is... It's what everyone needs at the moment. I'm surprised you're giving these away, Nick. It's a toilet roll.
Oh, you see, sacrifice that.
That is unreal. You're going to be bringing me back for that in a week, and you're not getting it. Fantastic. Well, this is a bit more weighty.
Yeah, don't get too excited.
It's a card, though. That's thoughtful. Oh, it's a tin. To the beans, yeah. Also,
everything you need.
There was none left in Tesco yesterday, so there you are. I mean, these are the best presents you can get.
I know, exactly. This is proper sacrifice.
Unreal. This one's bigger. Oh, tell you what. It's four cans of Guinness.
It's Paddy's Day, so
this.
I did think about
getting... I would say this is close to the most thoughtful birthday present I've ever had, because very useful. Something for everyone there, yeah. I think.
I mean, a can
it's
of Guinness.
It's a night out, that.
It's basically a meal as well. Yeah. A can of Guinness.
Yeah.
I did think of getting you a 4-pack of Corona. But
too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon, so hopefully that'll see you through.
I mean, Nick, I don't know what to say. Thank you so happy much birthday, for my birthday night is now sorted.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheers. Up the Reds.
Yes, mate.